details keep coming out, Domino, left and right on who's going to play where across various sports platforms. How do you feel about the NBA considering, allegedly, reportedly, the Disney Resort property in Orlando, a place we've been numerous times, as a possible location if the season, including the playoffs, does indeed resume?
Well, here's what I know. They have enough hotel rooms. I don't know what the park is going to be doing at that point.
Probably good way to look at it.
Yeah, but they certainly have the facilities. And we've been in, I've been in that gym that's over there. They have a facility that includes a couple of basketball
Let's talk to the Hall of Famer about that and more as he joins us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. He is Sir Charles. Charles Barkley on the Fan, 680 and 93.7 FM. Charles, always a pleasure. How you doing this morning?
Man, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it, Charles.
I know you had a little scare in the beginning of the pandemic when it hit the United States. You thought that you may have had it. Thankfully, you didn't. But it certainly, when you're scared like that, I would imagine puts a new perspective on it when you get that close to it.
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. I wasn't that worried. I just didn't feel well one day. I felt better like the next day, but I'd already taken a test. So I quarantined myself. It took a while to get the test, like 10 days. So that was boring. But I never felt like I was worn down. Because I was in five states in 5 days. But bless everybody out there who's got it or who's lost a loved one, and please be safe.
Charles Barkley with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. Your thoughts on the NBA season returning? We talked to Brian Windhorst from ESPN about it yesterday. It seems like if you're going to start up again, it should just be the postseason, should it not?
You know, that's a great question. I think Tim Kirchin said it best. It's one of the great lines I've ever heard. He says, all these ideas are bad. We just got to pick the best bad idea. I really don't see how we can play basketball and make it safe. To be honest, number one, it's going to suck without the fans because they are an integral part of what we do. But I don't know how you can make basketball safe. Because, you know, now you're looking at legal ramifications. If one of these players gets sick and, God forbid, somebody in their family dies, the legal ramifications are going to be catastrophic for the league.
Yeah, Charles, there's a whole lot of things about it. I keep saying, if you don't like this idea, just wait 48 hours, you'll get another one, and then we can shoot holes in that one. And then I like what Kirchin said, and I'm glad you quoted him, because the idea is one of them is going to be left on the table, and eventually somebody's going to have to say, okay, we picked this one. Because eventually somebody's going to have to say, we picked this one. This is the one we're going to go forward with.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, you know, and I said it probably 2 weeks ago, we might have to just bite the bullet and say, guys, this is not going to be safe. I don't see, you know, these ideas that you're going to keep NBA players in a hotel for 2 months. They won't be able to see their families. They can't leave the hotel except to play the game. You can't go out and eat. But then you got to worry about where everybody who had been at the restaurant has been. Also, you got to worry about who's at the hotel when they leave the hotel to go home to their families. I don't know if it's going to be fair to ask hotel workers to stay in a hotel for 2 months. I mean, we might just have to, hey, guys, let's let this thing die down. It's going to be ongoing for a long, extended period of time. And let's just start fresh in October. Because, like I say, there are, and like I say, I think it's one of the great lines, and I want to make sure I get Tim. He says, all these ideas are bad. Let's just pick the best bad idea and go forward. And I don't know how you can do it and make it safe.
All right, Charles, let's go through a bunch of things. I won't make the assumption. I will ask, have you been watching The Last Dance?
Yes. Okay. Yes, I have.
So explain to people what your relationship with Michael used to be, and you do believe you know why it's not the same relationship now. Can you explain what it was? And why do you think maybe it's not the same relationship? And it does have to do with basketball and the job that you need to do.
Sure. Yeah, me and Michael, I consider Michael one of my best friends since we actually met in 84 at the Olympic trials. And he was like a brother to me for many, many years. And I still want to say, I got no ill will toward Michael. He's the greatest basketball player ever. But he got offended by some of my criticisms of the job he was doing in the front office.
And obviously, Michael Jordan doesn't forget if anybody is critical or anybody slights him. You told a story about playing 36 holes of golf, Michael did, and then you played in an Olympic game that night. You want to tell the folks who haven't heard that story about how Michael was motivated?
Yeah, me and David Roberts and Chuck Daly, we're playing in the Tournament of Americas in Portland, Oregon, and we played Puerto Rico. So me, David, and Chuck and Michael got up that morning and played 18 holes. And then around noon, we're like, hey, let's head back and get some rest. Michael, like, I'm going to play another 18. And we're like, Michael, we got a game tonight. He's like, don't worry about it. I'll be fine. And then when we get to the game, Chuck is going around, well, you take this guy, you take this guy. Michael, like, hold on. I got that guy. And Chuck's like, Michael, that's the point guard. He says, I got him. He says some bad stuff about me in the newspaper. And Michael and Michael guarded this guy like it was game seven of the finals. I mean, it was a beautiful thing to watch. I mean, he had read something after playing 36 holes. Well, this guy had said something about him in a newspaper. And he actually, it was incredible to watch, to see. This guy never slept. I've never seen a guy who had more energy in my life, but he never slept. But man, any little thing that you said about him, he remembered it.
All right, we're going to separate fact from fiction about some of the dream team stuff in a second, but does it hurt you that Michael didn't understand you were doing your job? Was there ever a time when you thought about picking up the phone? Did he ever call you? Did you hear this from other people? Like, I don't understand how you doing your job. And by
it's
the
not
way,
personal.
And it's not like they were winning in Charlotte. It's not like you were banging on a guy who was almost winning championships but couldn't get over the hump. Why would it come down to that?
Well, Michael's built like that. As you see, anything somebody say about him, he can't let it go or look at it, whether it's a criticism, a spare or not. He's just not built like that. But like I say, it is what it is. It's unfortunate. But I wish him nothing but the best. And like I say, it's unfortunate.
Hall of Famer Charles Barkley with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line here on The Fan.
It's interesting we're talking about the Dream Team. A couple of things we have to get straight now. The college guys come in, and there's a couple of different versions of this story. One day they beat you by about 20, and then they beat you by 6 or 8, and they felt really good about themselves. Well, Krzyzewski stirs it up by saying Chuck Daly threw it. Grant Hill takes great offense to the idea that perhaps that 20 minutes was thrown. What's your version of what actually happened?
Well, what happened was when we first started scrimmaging, we wasn't taking it. They were college kids, man. We were all, I think at the time, around 30. As a Magic and Larry were, I think, a little bit older. But we were all, like, probably, I think, 30 at the time. These guys were, like, babies. So when we started scrimmaging, they were playing like it was game seven. And we were kind of just, like, trying to break a sweat. It was like the first day of the trials. Just screwing around. And these guys are playing like it's game seven. Before we know it, we're down close to 20 points, if I remember correctly. Then all of a sudden, we called timeout, and we said, hey, guys, let's just go ahead and just whoop the hell out of these kids right now. So we start just killing them, and we get it down to like 2 or 3 points, 4 points, somewhere there, and Chuck calls the game. He's like, that's it. That's enough for the day. We're like, what? And we laughed about it for like a week. So there's some truth in there somewhere from Grant and Chuck. But, yeah, after we came back and started stomping them. And from that day on, though, we just stomped them every day. We didn't play around with them anymore. We just stomped them every day from that point on.
I don't know if any of those guys have grandchildren yet. They're probably not old enough. But you do know the story that's going to be told to every grandchild of every guy who was on that team.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's like every time there's like a big sport event in history, you know, in some of these stadiums, you got 50,000-70,000 people. But by the time everybody lined up, they were there, you got like 600,000-700,000 people at some of these sporting events. So, hey, nothing surprises me in sports, man.
Charles Barkley with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. Obviously, during the Last Dance, the conversation of Isaiah Thomas not being on that dream team was brought up. Rod Thorne, who drafted Michael, was on that committee, said no conversations with Michael ever took place about Isaiah. Did you guys sense that at all? Was that talked about at all, Isaiah not being on that team?
Never. Never. I don't know what, and I want to make it clear, I don't know Michael and Rod. Rod's awesome, but I don't know what they talked about privately, obviously. But I was never mentioned about Isaiah. Number one, I had no idea who was going to be on the team. I remember it vividly, though. I was in Philadelphia at the time, obviously. I was playing golf, and I get a call from Rod, and I'm actually playing golf with my friend. They're like, Mike, Charles, you want to be on the dream team? I'm like, Yeah, of course I'd like to be on the Dream Team. He says, I'll get back with you on the information later down the line. And that was the extent. And then they called me like a week later and said, hey, we want you and Patrick and Larry and Michael and Magic to fly somewhere. I can't remember what it was, to take that famous cover shot. But they never asked me who was on. I never asked them who was on the team. And they never, because, you know, that's one thing that has always bothered me. Because, you know, you've heard that lie and rumor for years. Like I say, I don't know what happened between Michael and the NBA. But the notion that they talked to us about who was going to be on the team, because, you know, I thought Dominique Wilkins he was in the conversation. I think maybe James Worthy was in the conversation. But they never asked us anything about any other players. I want to put that lie to rest.
All right, there's another moment that allegedly it's the Michael Magic moment. There's a scrimmage that goes on where Michael basically says, hey, old man, it ain't the 80s anymore. It's not your league anymore. How close to true? Because Larry was hurt, and Larry supposedly looked at a couple of guys and said, it's over, brother. It's that guy's league now, talking about Michael.
Well, first of all, it was already Michael's league. I mean, it was Michael's league even before the as you see during the Bad Boys, even though they were the champions, Michael was – he was the best player in the league. Listen, the Dream Team scrimmages are the most intense thing I've ever been through in my life. It was incredible, every single practice, because you had this thing going on. Magic was still mad that Michael and Scotty had locked him up in the finals, so he was playing like it was game seven every day. You had Patrick and David, who were the best two centers, trying to kill each other. You got Clyde Drexler hated Michael Jordan, so they went at it every single day. And you had me and Karl Malone, who was trying to prove who was the best power forward. So you had all these egos. And the thing that's really amazing, I tell people, I loved 92 because we all got along great. Did we try to kill each other during practice? 100%. But we played cards every single night. We got along every single night. Because I hated 96. That was the one in Atlanta. The only reason I played in 96 was because it was in the States. You got to bring all your family and friends. But I hated 96. If you go back and talk to some of the players, guys were bitching about playing time. Guys were bitching about starting. And it was a nightmare. Like, I played on that first team. Nobody ever complained. Chuck had two different starting lineups. Nobody ever had a disagreement over playing time. But in 96, for me, it was a nightmare. I'm glad I did it because it was in the States. But, man, we had guys complaining. We had guys like a couple guys. I don't want to mention they skip practice. I'm not coming to practice. I'm not playing enough. I'm not starting. So other than being in Atlanta and being in the States, 96 was a nightmare. But 92, I've never been through something so intense every single day. Because, like, if I'm playing against Karl Malone, I got to play at 100% maximum effort the entire time. Same thing with David Robinson and Patrick Ewing. So that's why it was so intense in practice every day.
How smart was Chuck Daly during all that?
Chuck was amazing. Chuck, to me, he was just amazing. Number one, when you got – I guess, you know, we obviously, everybody in the world has an ego, but it never reared its head. Like, Chuck was like, hey, guys, y'all know that if y'all lose this thing, it would be the greatest upset in sports history. And from that point on, we're like, oh, because let's be honest, we had no idea how big it was going to be until we got to Barcelona. You know, we knew it'd be like, okay, it's the Olympics. A couple guys had bet. When we got there, you know, there was 5,000 people standing outside of our hotel like every day. And then when we went to the game, there was a helicopter above the plane. There was a police car in front and back. And on the side, there was two armed motorcycle cops on each side of the bus. But like I said, it was 5,000 to 10,000 people by the time the Olympics ended standing outside of our hotel every single day. It was amazing and crazy. It was crazy. I mean, and they could only see each one of us probably the length of two cars maybe trying to get to the bus. And obviously at that time, Magic and Larry saved the NBA. If it wasn't for those two guys, the NBA would not be what it was today. And obviously, Michael took it to a whole nother level. But I've always said Magic Johnson and Larry Bird are the two guys who saved the NBA because, you know, everybody looks at all this stuff going on today. But remember back then when Commissioner Stern took over, the league was too black. We had a bunch of guys who did drugs. And I give Magic and Bird all the credit for saving the league. And obviously, Michael took it to another level.
Charles Barkley with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. And it sounds kind of strange to say, but Magic Johnson, for those that never saw him play, he's underrated because people talk about LeBron and Michael and certainly great players. Michael's the greatest of all time. But a 6'9 point guard, you know this, Charles, nobody was doing that back then.
Well, you know, I always tell people I think that Magic is one of the freaks of nature. Like, you've never seen it. And you're probably never going to see it again, a 6'9 point guard. You know, LeBron's a great, great player, and he plays like point forward, but he don't play it like Magic plays it. And like I say, Magic is just you're never going to see a 6'10 point forward, point guard. I mean, he played point guard. LeBron's a point forward, but, man, You're right, Magic, and he's underrated. I don't think he's underrated. I mean, he's one of the handful of 10, 15 greatest players ever.
Have you ever thought about who the best five on a court at once would truly be? Like, it's sort of like thinking like a – look, you lived it, so you're not really thinking like a fan, but there's a hint of fan. There's a hint of GM. There's a hint of head coach. What five guys would I throw on a court and believe that they would be unbeatable? Like, unbeatable. You take your five, and then you take your five. You're never going to beat my five. Have you ever even thought about it that way?
I've been asked that question many times. I don't think you would. I don't think you could have a five that couldn't be beat. You know, I've always said Michael's one, Oscar's two, Kareem, Bill Russell, and Wilt are three, four, and five in no particular order. I got Kobe six, LeBron seven. I got Jerry West, Elgin Baylor, and Tim Duncan, and Magic and Bird in my top 10, 11 right there. I think, listen, nobody would know who would win between those two teams. And obviously, you have to factor in, man. One thing that I have, there's a couple of things about this documentary that are amazing, and I hope the young kids appreciate how Michael. And listen, I'm not the old guy. I mean, I've said Kobe's the closest I've ever seen to Michael. No disrespect to LeBron, but Kobe's the closest I've seen. But just listen to him talk. When Roy Williams talked about this guy, said, "I'm gonna be the hardest working guy you ever seen," and he never turned it off. And then when he had a chance, he played with a broken foot, and as you got a chance to ruin your career, he says, "I don't care. I just want to play basketball." And I hope these young guys out here realize, like, because now these guys are more concerned with Twitter followers and their brand. The only thing that matters, man, is being great at basketball. That's the thing I think separates those old guys from today's guys. These guys are worried about Twitter followers and things like that. Like, nah, man, let's screw all that other stuff. If you're great at basketball, all that stuff is going to come. And I hope that's the one thing these guys learn. Because the one thing they made a big deal out of in episode one and two was how much money Scottie Pippen was making. They never said that Michael Jordan was barely making more than Pippen. You know, they tried to change the narrative like, well, Scottie got – because Scottie made more money than Michael Jordan his entire career. Michael only made money those last 2 years in Chicago. Scottie Pippen made more money than Michael. But nobody ever said when they won them first championship, Michael was barely making more than Scottie. But no, they didn't talk about that, which kind of made it – I understand they got a subjective narrative they're trying to portray. But go back, other than those last 2 years in Chicago where Michael made $30 million, he made basically the same, maybe a little bit more. Yes, he was making more off the court, but that does not count. But Michael just wanted to be the greatest basketball player ever. That's what I'm hoping these young kids learn from this documentary.
I also think they're sort of making Jerry Krause hold a bag of crap here at the end of the day, too.
Hey, listen, let me tell you something. I'm so glad you said that. I've been blasting Jerry Reinsdorf every interview that I have done the last week. This notion that little Jerry Krause ruined the Bulls is crazy. Jerry Reinsdorf ruined the Bulls. But if you go back and look, remember when Horace Grant left? That's because he didn't want to pay Horace. He left and took a free agent deal in Orlando. And he got Michael on the cheap, and he complained the whole time he was playing Michael Jordan that money. And he didn't want to pay Scottie Pippen. And I thought it was a joke the way they tried to make Jerry Krause. And I listen, Jerry had his issues, but let me tell you something. This thing, I think it's a travesty and a joke the way they tried to portray Krause and let Reinsdorf off the hook. The notion that he would let little Jerry Krause break up the Bulls is a joke. So you are 100% correct in your assessment.
Anything you saw over the first few episodes of The Last Dance that maybe surprised you or you didn't know about?
I didn't know Dennis took a vacation in the middle of the season. I thought that might be – I thought that was – I've been in the NBA since 1984. That is by far and away the most hilarious thing. And I love the way when he says, Michael, when Phil said, hey, Michael, I need you to come to my office. Dennis got something he wants to say to you. I thought that was the best scene of the first four episodes. I mean, this man needs a – he says, Scott, I took a vacation. I need a vacation. I thought that was one of the funniest, greatest things I'd ever heard in my 30 years in the NBA.
Can I tell you the guy that I thought for about 8 seconds stole the whole thing was Ron Harper when he was talking about the Elo shot and what that he wasn't going to get his chance to defend Michael. Ron Harper was in there for about 8 seconds, and it might have been the greatest cameo I've ever seen in a movie.
Well, let me just tell you something. And listen, I know Ron thinks he's a great defender, but the shot that Michael made, I don't think anybody on the planet could have played better defense. I mean, the notion that, because that guy had to pump twice, hang in the air. Like, there's no defense for that.
And he's going to his left. He's going against his natural motion.
Hey, I love Ron Harper. But the notion that you're going to stop that guy, you say, we're going to force him left. We're going to make him double clutch from a little bit above the free throw line. Like, yeah, let's do that. He can't make that shot. The notion that I love Ron, but the notion that he was going to stop a double clutch Michael Jordan, that wasn't going to happen.
All right, a couple of things quickly. You talk about playing in the 80s into the 90s, and we see what today's game is. No hand checking. We see the bad boys thing. There's a whole generation that's never seen – you know, guys get pushed three rows in. There's a whole generation I've never seen guys fight and not even get thrown out of games, let alone suspended. Give me the guys who were legitimate tough guys. Like, you knew for a fact, oh, that guy. And it's not like NBA guys are ever really going to know how to fight. But there are some guys you probably go, that guy's legit, that guy's fake. Give me a couple of legit tough guys in the NBA in your time.
Lonnie Shelton was a legit tough guy. Charles Oakley is a legit tough guy. Kenyon Martin, Gary Payton. It's not many guys. Well, first of all, nobody's scared of anybody. Let's get that out of the way. But there's guys because they like to fight, which is make them a jackass anyway. Nobody should like to fight. That doesn't make you a good player. That just makes you a punk. Anybody who likes to fight, that's just not for the NBA. That's like in everyday life. I mean, anybody who wants to fight all the time, that just makes you a punk. But there's some guys, I think that's pretty much, I'm missing somebody here or there, but.
Who were the fake ones? Who were the fake ones?
Oh, that's just like most of them. I mean, guys don't want to fight. Listen, nothing good can happen in a fight, but I will tell you this, man, my admiration for Michael, the way they beat him down three straight years, you know, you forgot. You remember it because you played against the Pistons. They were out there trying to hurt people. But to rehash it, man, was pretty awesome to watch, to see the way they physically beat this dude up. You're like, damn, I knew it was bad, but, you know, it's been so long ago you forgot. Like, man. These dudes out here, play out here just like, and I would love, you know what I think they should do? I would love them to get together with some NBA officials and like sit down and do a Pistons game and see how many technicals and suspensions those guys would have actually got doing they run of the bad boys. How many, you know, flagrant ones and flagrant twos. I would love for somebody to sit down and say, I'm going to watch every Pistons game during their 3-year run where they won the championship and lost to the Lakers. I think that would be hilarious television. How many suspensions and flagrants they would have actually gotten.
Charles, they showed the one, obviously, late in game 4 when the Bulls were sweeping the Pistons when Rodman fouls Pippen and pushes him in the lower back. But in passing, they showed another highlight. He undercuts Pippen, and then Rodman has that sly grin on his face. If that happened in today's NBA, just that one basic play, he's suspended maybe for the rest of the playoffs. You could really hurt a guy doing what Rodman did to Pippen there.
Listen, that's what I'm saying. I remember a lot of that stuff, but to see it again, you're like, man, these dudes, these are 5 to 10 game suspensions minimum. I mean, because obviously they're habitual too, which, you know, they get 2 games the first flagrant. By the 5th or 6th flagrant, they would get 10, 15, 20 games. But it was and that's the thing when guys try to compare the way these guys play today. And I ain't gonna hate on no young player today. Let's take Trae Young, who I love watching Trae Young play. And like I say, this is not a knock. It's just a fact. Can you imagine Trae Young getting beat up by Isaiah Thomas and Joe Dumars and then going in there and have Rodman and Lambert just beat the hell out of him? It would be a totally different game for him. And let's say, I love Trae now. I don't want to think I'm hating on Trae. But it would be a totally different game for these young guys, especially the little guys trying to play what Michael and Scotty, myself, Dominique Wilkins. I mean, the stuff when you played against those. I used to always tell people, you used to always call your family and say goodbye when you played the Pistons because there was a chance you couldn't come out of there. But they were really trying to hurt people.
But going back to your original point, Charles, Michael never complained. He just went through it.
Well, you know, another thing, and that goes back to that handshake thing. The Pistons were wrong. I didn't realize that Michael shook their hands after they beat them 3 years in a row. I got to tell you something. That made my admiration for Michael grow and made the Pistons look even worse when they walked off. When you lose, you can't walk off like that. Because you notice when they won, they were there shaking hands. And Michael shook their hands. There's no way. I'm not even faking it. I'm not even trying to be a tough guy. I'm not sure I would have shaken their hands after they had beat the hell out of me physically. I'm not even going to lie. Michael was a better man. Like, I'm not sure I would have shaken their hand because they were physically trying to hurt that man.
Well, I don't want to play Henry Kissinger, whatever your relationship is. But I find it kind of sad that you're not going to have a conversation with Michael to tell him those things. Like, I don't know if the relationship will be fixed. And, again, it's your business. You're grown-ass men. But I kind of find it a little bit sad that Michael will never hear those words. It doesn't sound like coming from you directly in a one-on-one conversation.
Well, it's sad for me too, brother. It's sad for me too. It really is sad for me. And you said something earlier, have I ever tried to pick up the phone? That ain't going to happen, brother. Hey, I got an ego too. That ain't going to happen. I can say all the great things I want to, but that ain't me picking up the phone. That ain't never going to happen.
Well, maybe one day somebody will pick up the phone. Somebody will broker the piece. Charles Barkley, we got to run. It's always a pleasure having you on. Hopefully we can talk again real soon.
Hey, guys, y'all be safe in Atlanta. Y'all know that's my second home. Please be safe down there.
We'll see you soon too, Charles. Thank you very much.
I hope so.
Yeah, makes all of us. I think we're all in the same boat when it comes to that. Charles Barkley, Hall of Famer with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. Another Auburn guy is coming up. Second-round pick of the Falcons, Marlon Davidson, in about 10 minutes from now.
I never wanted to tell you this. You know, we have an invite to go down there one Thursday night when they're doing the – like, if we get it back at some point, hopefully it's this season.
Well,
maybe
go.
It's the playoffs. Let's go. We'll go down. He's actually asked a couple of times, and I think he's meant it. I don't think he was really just throwing it out there.
I'll keep my mouth shut. Wouldn't be the first time. I don't want to, you know, talk a big game. Wouldn't be the first time I was there on that set.
But yeah,
I would love to go back.
Okay, good. Well, now that I think about it, I don't think he said you. I'm not sure if he said plus one.
I think he just said Domino.